Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO. It's a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 383, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you're listening and might want to support the show, it starts at as little as $5 a month, and you can visit the newly revamped thegreynato.com for more details. My name is James Stacey, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, Jason Heaton. Hey, Jason, how we doing?
I'm doing pretty well. It's an exciting week. We got a new TGN website up, which hopefully people will go check out. There's not a ton of new stuff there, but it looks nice. It looks great. You did a good job with that.
Nice to have a bit of a refresh. I think we had one of maybe the most basic websites still on the internet, at least for an active element on the internet. But yeah, I was able to get some help from Claude.
Oh yeah,
with a plan, and then once you actually have the plan, putting it through Squarespace is easy enough. But yeah, we've got a new website, thegreynato.com. Check it out if you like. Nice place to kind of find spots to subscribe if you want to be part of the TGN supporter crew. You can get in there, and then certainly links out to all the show notes for every single episode, so everything we talk about, we link and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, bringing us up to this week, now that we've got that new website launched, we have Wind Up Chicago. So we're recording this on Tuesday. In a couple of days, we'll both fly to Chicago. And then the evening of the 10th on Friday, we have our event with Citizen at Forbidden Root. It's a fully RSVP'd event. It's very full. So if you RSVP'd and aren't going to go, please cancel your ticket so somebody else can claim it. And otherwise, if you weren't able to get in, we apologize, but we hope to see you either at the show or at any of the other hangouts kind of happening around the city that weekend. Jason, looking forward to that?
I am. Yeah, it's going to be a whirlwind trip. And, we skipped last year, and so it feels like a while. And I'm also looking forward to our annual sushi dinner. So we won't be partaking in much of the food probably at Forbidden Root. We'll leave that for others, but we're going to fill our bellies with...
I'm going to be so full of uni.
Yeah, it should be great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sushi, our semi-annual sushi date, always looking forward to that. We found an equally awesome spot here in Toronto.
Oh, man. Here for the Toronto show. Still dreaming about that place.
Right? Oh, man, it's so good. But yeah, speaking of the Toronto show, that is the weekend of September 26th. It's coming up really fast. So please plan on being there if you can. I believe the tickets launch sometime soon. So I would say, pay attention to the link in the show notes if that's something you're interested in. And be sure to stay tuned to the show as we're going to do another big party with Marathon. I think it's one of the best parties of the year. It's a great time, and it's something we're really excited about. So lots going on as far as shows in the next couple of months. And I know it's only July, but the time from July to September feels like a couple of weeks.
Sure does.
Usually.
Yeah.
Especially at this summer's pace. But yeah, outside of events and travel and that sort of thing, what have you been up to?
Man, I'm just in heavy duty editing mode here at home. I'm moving in a few weeks. And so I've just been kind of brutally purging. I think I've mentioned it before. So I can't tell you how good it feels. I mean, it really does. I've lived in this house for 20 plus years. And so it's just, you tend to accumulate a lot of stuff. And living in the city, it's, I put something out on the curb with a free sign on it, and it's gone within the hour. So that's helpful. And then I've been, selling a lot of stuff on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist and whatever else. And it's been, it's been good. It's been a process, but
that's great, man. You excited for the move?
I am.
Excited for the new spot?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Just moving across town. I should have a proper garage for the first time in pretty much my whole life. So I'm pretty stoked about that. Been spent a little time last week kind of setting that up with workbenches and moving some things around and plotting and planning where the Land Rover will go. And so, yeah, all super, super exciting stuff. It's a little different type of summer than usual, a lot less kind of travel and adventuring and more just kind of logistics here at home. But I think, that's equally rewarding, and it has to be done. And I'd rather be doing it now than, hauling stuff around in slush and ice in the winter. So
yeah, the move is not to have to do this in January.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And how about
that's great.
Anything else besides packing for Chicago or unpacking? Maybe you don't even bother unpacking these days.
I do, it's different every time. And with Chicago, I really kind of set myself a goal to do just a backpack. It's just a weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used to be really good at this. And now, I'm kind of a, I guess a stressed packer is how it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
I like to start a few days before. I have a folding table in my office. I'll bring it out, and that becomes like my place to put things that I would like to pack and bring with me.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever it is, I have lost my talent for packing pretty lightly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still very good at keeping it to a carry-on and, you know, a second bag. But as soon as you drop that roller and you go to the fully on foot mode,
yeah,
I got to work on it a bit. I really got to kind of like think about what I need, and you know, we're going on a dive, so how much space am I sacrificing for a mask and the kind of stuff I'm not going to rent. Which really, at this point, I'll rent or borrow everything but the mask, which is kind of my mode when I'm on foot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the weekend. And otherwise, I haven't really been doing much other than work. You know, we were at the cottage this weekend, hanging out, and otherwise, just been at the desk, kind of, you know, keeping Hodinkee on track here, and kind of prepping to be able to be as offline as possible for the Friday, Saturday, Sunday of Chicago.
Yeah, right. Speaking of packing, this is kind of a good segue into wrist check, but besides a Citizen, which I think we're both wearing today, are you going to be bringing any other watches to Chicago, or are you going to go light on that front as well?
I'll bring the DWC Terra. Delhi Watch Co. Because I've said on the pod that I'd bring it with me. That's an easy one to have around, and I think people will like to see it.
Yeah.
You know, I had it at a recent Hodinkee happy hour that we did at the end of June in New York, and people really got a kick out of it. And you know, it's nice to see that watch is getting some attention. But yeah, the plan is to wear my Aqualent Duplex, which is what I'm wearing for the show today. I've been wearing it a bunch. I wore it last weekend. I don't know. I have such a, obviously it's like well on record as having a real soft spot for Anti-Digi, but I also really just have a soft spot for like this kind of, ugly is the wrong term, but they are like an awkward watch. Like there's something very kind of intentional, direct about a standard Aqualand, like the one we all know and love, the one that you and I own a couple of. I think you're wearing your vintage, what's that, a C203 or whatever today.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
These ones that are a little bit more 90s coded, we'll say, a little bit more fast and loose on the sort of direction with the semi-skeletonized hands and two screens. It has two screens and it does less than a standard Aqualand in many ways, but it can show you a little bit more at the same time.
Oh, sure.
If that makes sense. Like you can have your chronograph minutes up top and your seconds down bottom, but that's not more really. It's just different.
Yeah.
But I love the kind of 90s techie dive watch computer before computers were as kind of prolific as they are now or available as they are now.
Yeah.
It wears really nicely on a NATO, which is probably how I'll have it. But a good buddy of the show has sourced me the original titanium bracelet for it.
Shout out
Ben for that hookup. And so we're going to do a little trade. I have to find something cool in my office here to bring. Also fit that, whatever that is, in the backpack.
That's great.
But I'll have a bracelet for it, theoretically, by this weekend. So
wow.
Whether or not I'm able to fit that bracelet and size it and take it on a dive, I don't know, but I'll bring a couple tools. Again, more things for the backpack.
Yeah, right.
You can see why I'm not good at this. And you know I'm going to have to end up buying something to ship everything home that I'm given or buy at Windup and all that kind of thing. So I should probably just go with a roller, but then you got to carry it around the whole time. I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it's, you know, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I'm rocking the titanium Aqualand Duplex, and I absolutely love this watch. I had it in the water at the cottage this past weekend, and I did a couple of kind of very short, you know, sub 1 minute little free dives.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're about 4 feet down, the dive function initiates automatically and it starts a log with the date and the time and all that kind of stuff. So it still has all of its ability. Who knows what we'll see when we get down to depth.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's still, you know, fully watertight, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But I'm looking forward to taking it diving and I think it's the right watch for the weekend for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. As you mentioned, I've got my vintage Aqualand on. This is the one from 85. I had to pull it out yesterday in anticipation of the trip because, you know, the battery life on these was quite short back in the day. Still is. This is the first generation that had three small batteries in it. And, you know, one I think powered the depth sensor, one the analog display, and one the digital display, or maybe whatever. And they're a real pain to replace. You know, I've done them in my past. I've done them myself in the past, and it's doable. You know, you got a steady hand, and it's a bunch of tiny little screws that hold the case back on. But I took it out thinking like, oh, if the battery's flat, you know, I need to address that before the weekend, before I fly, because this is the watch I'll be taking with me. So, yeah, whether or not I dive with this one or not, I did the last time we did a wind up in a lake, and it worked fine, and it's kind of cool that a watch from 1985 still functions as it does. But
regardless, sure.
I've got it on the original, you know, printed rubber long strap, which is so incredibly long. I have it on the second to smallest hole, and I've got, you know, 7 1/4 inch wrists or thereabouts, and so not super tiny wrists. I mean, you really couldn't have a wrist any smaller than mine and get away with this strap. They were really made to be worn over a wetsuit, so, which is really cool.
That's a great watch, and certainly if I didn't have this this sort of later generation duplex, I would bring one of my standard Aqualands. I still have the 40th and the 17W, the Loom dial, and I love them both.
Well, I think the duplex is, I haven't seen one in person for a long time, but it's kind of my second favorite vintage Aqualand. I think
the Hyper is pretty nutty, but it's not any digi.
Yeah, right.
Just digital.
Yeah. But I love the duplex. There was just something about the different variations. I think they made an orange dial and a blue dial and some others. And they're,
I think there's a Loom dial as well.
They're just cool. I think once the Aqualand went into the fully analog space, I don't know, maybe later 90s or whatever, they kind of lost me a little bit for a while using the hands for depth. So I still have such a soft spot for the digital versions. So be fun to reunite these two or bring these two together, these different generations, later this week.
Yeah, I think this one's from the mid to late 90s. Mm-hmm. We can definitely do a little bit more research and maybe tell a little bit of a story post-dive. But obviously we're big Aqualand sort of knuckleheads, and I'm not going to miss my chance to throw this on my wrist alongside, I guess a Descent Mark II as my current dive computer. But yeah, looking forward to it. It'll be fun to be in the water. Hopefully not too cold. It'll be fine.
Yeah, right. I think it should be warmish, I think.
Sometimes I worry about it for a minute and then go like, I've survived all those 7 mil dives in Vancouver. It's not going to be significantly colder or even, I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
I dove dry the past couple times I did this, and this time I'm bringing a wetsuit, and most of the guys will wear wetsuits, so if I remember right, it was quite balmy last time. I think it'll be fine. It's a pretty shallow dive, so should be
sushi great. Diving watch show, not so bad.
That'll be good.
But look, let's get into today's main topic. As you know from the title, it's the part two of our Slack Crew and A. We just did two episodes that required a fair amount of editing and production for the sort of Rolex Explorers episode, and then mine from SailGP. And we thought it'd be fun to kind of follow up with a second outing of the 2026 Slack Crew and A. I should have written this down, but of course I didn't. If you're brand new to the Slack Crew and A, welcome. Nice to have you here. Weird episode to start with, but God bless. And basically, normally we do Q&A episodes with recorded audio files from the paid side of our audience, from the TGN supporter crew. They can send in files. We do a monthly thereabouts episode where we kind of make it sound like a radio show. And this idea of the Slack Crew and A kind of flips that on its head, where we take text questions from the Slack crew and offer it as a public episode. I think that's reasonably direct. Basically, these are questions from the paid side of the audience that are in the TGN Slack, and it kind of gives you an idea what's going on in there. Some of these questions are pretty zany. Some of them are pretty straightforward. But Jason, do you want to kick it off with one from our good pal Jackson B?
Jackson B, our devoted moderator and longtime supporter. He says, you guys generally are hands-off on the Slack, participating more so than driving things day-to-day. So, what's each of your favorite things that have happened within or come out of the crew? And then, flip side, anything you wish your favorite group of knuckleheads would do less of? Where do you start with this one? You have anything on the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, I think that... The big moments for me are always when we're able to launch a product that people are excited about. like the moment on the TGN Slack when we launched the CWN one, and you know, suddenly we had a 300 comment thread that was just kind of melting my phone when notifications were on. That kind of stuff is really fun. And then I like that it's a very direct line to what I would call like real feedback. You know, the internet these days is, and I complain about this a lot, so I won't belabor it, but the internet these days, to me, as someone who grew up when the internet was essentially just a digital handshake with another human being, today you have to filter for an algorithm, so you're not even seeing the stuff that your friends want or like or enjoy or are sharing. And then you have to deal with bots and other AI elements, like things that aren't even real humans but are operating in a human-like fashion. And I think probably my favorite thing about the crew and about the Slack is the ability to get like actual human feedback, good and bad. And everybody's super like people will call me on something if I'm wrong or give me an edit note. Give me another hour to talk on mic. I will mispronounce something for sure. And someone will tell me that I, you know, said Appalachia wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. And fair play. That's all fine. But I like that it comes from a human being and it can be delivered in that way. And even if the feedback is like, we really liked this.
Yeah.
I like that I feel like it's still a place where I can absorb that as actual feedback, not as something that's gone through a filter where a platform is trying to convince me to spend more time on that platform. So it gives me either positive or negative feedback to keep me hooked, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It still feels like a human noise layer, which I like quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think too, I think, you know, for a community that has, you know, 2,000 members in it, it's remarkably unanonymous. I think that's, you know, kind of, you know, riffing off of your point about the difference between that and social media and kind of the difference between what social media used to be and what it is nowadays. I think it kind of does go back to that era when, you know, you felt like, it, kind of like what it was when I first got into the Watch forums, you know, there was some kind of snarkiness and, you know, back and forth sort of whatever. But I think even at that time, some of the smaller forums were just kind of fun community places. And I like that this has kind of come around to that. And there, even though we all have kind of handles and usernames or some of us do, we've kind of fostered this, you know, community or this idea that, let's be less anonymous. Let's be forthright, especially when it comes to buying, selling, and trading. It just feels like a little bit more of a safe space, if you will, not just for that, but for communicating. And, you know, we've also seen some remarkable acts of humanity, you know, people supporting each other, you know, long threads about, you know, mental health, physical health, you know, life changes.
And charity t-shirts.
Yeah, and people just rallying around causes and the kind of the collaboration that came out of our wildfire relief efforts last year in California. You know, I get supportive direct messages, well, not even just supportive, just direct messages from people regularly. Just, you know, they might be asking a question or just offering a bit of support or reinforcement or thanks or criticism or whatever it might be. And I appreciate all of that because I really feel like, you know, not to belabor this or go on too long about it, but you know, the kind of the overarching thing that we're seeing in the news these days about the manosphere and kind of you know, a lot of the kind of negativity around some online communities, I feel like we can kind of counteract that to a certain degree, and I think it's a space where you know, we certainly have our share of women in the audience, but it is a largely male audience, and it's kind of nice to see kind of men coming together specifically in this case and just being supportive of each other and kind of talking openly and vulnerably. And I think that's really great.
Yeah, I would agree. And then the other one that really strikes me is how much that digital part actually does just simply make it to the real world.
Mm-hmm.
There's big TGN hangouts, there's local contingents, there are, you know, friends being made. And then we even have people who travel internationally, you know, shout out Chris F, for example. You know, people who come a really long way, and then I'll find out, oh, you know, you find out that person went to Vancouver recently or went to Minneapolis recently and like extended that reach all based on what's kind of going in there. And, you know, the autonomy of that, where like, sure, we do the marathon parties or the citizen party this week or that sort of thing. But the fact that it just extends into we can do this ourselves is perfect.
Yeah.
Which I like a lot.
Yeah.
Anything you would love less of?
I can't really think of anything. You know, we've had a couple of isolated incidents of, you know, we had a bit of bad a scandal actors. on the BST, bad actors, which we addressed, but, no, other than that, I'm just constantly amazed at how civil and respectful, that community remains, even with that many members. I can't really think of anything that, that I see that I kind of shake my head and say, boy, I wish that wasn't going on. A few kind of little bickers and arguments and things, but it usually gets resolved like normal humans do. So it's great.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, thank you so much for that question, Jackson B. That was a solid one and a good way to kick it off. Next up, we've got one from Kai about, I'm immediately in the mode of expecting to hear Kai's voice.
Yeah.
We have to read the question, James. So next up, we've got one from Kai who says, it's been 10 years of TGN and you've decided to make a mixtape for your co-host. What is your thematic approach and what are a few tracks that you'd have on their tape? It's kind of a fun one.
Yeah, I think, you know, you and I have overlapped on kind of music and shared music things back and forth several times over the year. I wouldn't say it's like a main theme of ours, but, you know, when I've visited you, we've sat and listened to music and you've recommended things. And of course, I think we've both done it a bit in Final Notes or on the show, you more than me. But I wouldn't necessarily say that like our tastes are entirely perfectly aligned. But I've learned a lot about a lot of different music from you. And the temptation with a mixtape was to like kind of include only that stuff that we kind of overlap on. But I think you have a broad enough appreciation of music in general that, you know, a lot of stuff that I would put on a mixtape that inspires me would resonate with you as well. And I think rather than specific tracks, I just thought of a few artists that I would put on there. And I think one band that came to me relatively recently, like within the past couple of years, that I wish I had gotten into earlier, and I think you did, was The War on Drugs. Just think, you know, Thinking of a Place or Under the Pressure are just songs I listen to almost on repeat. I listen to those a lot. Neil Young, I'd put some Neil Young on there. Some you know, got to do some Gordon Lightfoot. I mean, leaning into the Canada angle with both of those guys.
For sure.
Big fan of The Police. I'm not sure where you came down on them. I think, you know, you have at least some healthy respect for them. Pink Floyd, I know you're a fan.
Huge fan.
So, yeah, I'd kind of do that. I think I'd take more of a kind of a thematic approach in terms of kind of, you know, I mean, I could do like a full tape that was like old school kind of progressive rock or kind of Guitar Hero stuff or kind of to emulate your taste. But I think I'm just going to kind of pull from my own playlist and put a few of those acts that I mentioned on there. So
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I would love a mixtape of you of like, here's the 10 Police songs you've got to listen to from like a real fan. Cause I think I just know the hits.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And like, totally. I know that you like The Police and you like all the stuff Sting has done since.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's almost too much music for me to figure out.
Yeah.
I'm too old to be like, oh, I'm going to go through the 17 albums that are probably more than that.
Yeah. Right.
That are out there. But yeah. I love that idea. That's great.
Yeah.
And not like broadly different than the scope I was taking. So for my mixtape, you know, I know that you're something of an Anglophile and you enjoy British music as well, but not necessarily for the same reasons. So mine was sort of like newer in the last decade, we'll call it, British stuff that I think you should know.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have five songs that I thought up pretty quickly. I used to include the music in these episodes. Spotify gets really upset about it.
Yeah.
Nobody else seems to care. I think it falls under commentary. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I'm never quite sure. So unfortunately, I can't include any of these, but I will put show notes to YouTube where you can just listen to the track, at least in decent-ish quality.
Yeah.
The first one is Funeral by James Blake.
Mm.
This is from a recent album. It's absolutely, the whole album's incredible, but this is a great one. The next one is a song that I have been obsessed with now for nine years. I think it came out in 2017. And it's a band. The band is called Hers and the song is What Once Was. Very interesting band, very sad story. Neither of the two young men from the band are around. They passed in a car accident while touring in the States. But this song has remained like this kind of calling card and it shows up on the internet in interesting places in this memory of the band. The next one would be a Rose Betts song from, I think like a, I think it's from like a Zack Snyder version of one of the DC films, like a Batman movie.
Huh.
I'm the wrong, like I know a fair bit about films. I don't do comic book movies very well. but this song is incredible. It's called Song to the Siren. And it's incredible. It's just, it's absolutely nuts. And on a decent set of speakers, it'll blow your hair back. It's a good one. The next one is a band that I know I've shared with you before, London Grammar. And this is a more recent cut from them called Californian Soil, which has, I think, like a sort of pace that I could see you kind of enjoying. Yeah. It's a really good one. And then more recently, there's a great band called The Japanese House, and the song is I Saw You in a Dream. A little bit harder to describe that one. It's a mix of several different, like, very modern or current musical influences. But those would be the five that I'd recommend. I think some of it would be pseudo familiar to you, and some of it would be fairly fresh. But I'll include all of those in the show notes.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I remember years ago you introduced me to London Grammar, and they're a definite regular rotation on my playlists these days. So yeah, I'll take anything else too.
They have an incredible KEXP performance, and the keyboardist is wearing an Aerospace. I love it.
Oh, that's great.
Young guy with a two-tone Aerospace.
Oh my gosh.
I'll include that as well, because it's a good one. If you don't know London Grammar, simply amazing. Great stuff. Some of my favorite driving music. Because it all has a pretty good beat, but it's not too intense. All right, Kai, that was a good one. Fun question.
Yeah, definitely. All right, next up we have one from Ninad, who asks, which article, editorial, or project written or created by the other person do you wish you'd had a chance to write or be involved in? Two came to mind for me initially, and not that I would have wanted to write them. I just think it would have been a blast to kind of ride shotgun with you on these. One, literally, which was the one you did for Hodinkee about driving the vintage Porsches over the Grossglockner in the Austrian Alps. Just on the weight of your photography alone on that one, like that bright, crisp alpine sky and the snow and those beautiful cars and the color. I don't know. Just something about crisp mountain air and, you know, vintage cars. I can just imagine the buzz, you know, like a good cup of coffee and like just kind of hanging out, keeping warm with friends. It had this vibe to it that just immediately was attractive to me. And it was just such a great story, you know, whether or not, you know, I know a lot of automotive related stuff kind of is controversial on watch websites for whatever reason. It's kind of silly, but I found that one really compelling. And then the other one was from your earlier days at a blog to watch, and that is the famed Clipperton expedition. I think, you know,
would have been fun to have you on that boat.
Driving and diving. This is quintessential TGN stuff. And I think that story, and of course we did an early episode where you talked about it for the full episode. I think the two of those, I could have been a wingman easily on either of those and really enjoyed myself.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it would have been amazing to have you at either of those. I was just reminiscing about the Porsche shoot. That's with all the 550s and a couple 718s up at the top of Grossglockner for a GP ice race thing that company, I believe, is now FAT or has kind of splintered off into other things. But they, you know, that's still Ferdy Porsche's sort of one of his projects, and they do some very cool stuff. But I was thinking back on that because I have such limited memories, and I realize it's something I don't think I've talked about on the show, but I was going through like a fairly severe medical reaction to a booster shot I had gotten.
Oh yeah.
Right. Do you remember me talking about that? I know I told you at some point, but like basically I couldn't have anything really touch my skin without it, like wherever it touched, I would get hives.
Yeah.
And then about 10 minutes later, they would go away. I had to change clothes because I couldn't be wearing a belt. I couldn't really have shirts with like a collar.
Yeah.
And I was just on so much Benadryl that I don't have like a lot of, I have to go back and look at the photos to kind of like remember that day.
Oh boy.
I was in Switzerland for like 7 or 8 days. We were kind of changing hotels. It was all very nice, but like the flight out there was absolutely terrible. and I just, it was very difficult to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's weirdly like the thing that I remember when I see that is, and it comes up, I think it's some of my best photography work that I've ever done.
Yeah.
We got incredibly lucky with, you know, the conditions and the light and being up there very early in the morning. Shout out Tino for driving me up the mountain, like a bat out of hell. And we got up there before first light. And of course I was shooting with some very, very talented photographers that were there for, you know, magazines like Curves, like Stefan Bauer and these guys. And yeah, I had a great time. I think a lot of those photos held up really nicely. But it's always weird that there's that kind of background that, you just kind of keep that kind of stuff to yourself. But it was that condition or whatever that reaction lasted like about 9 months.
Wow. Yeah.
and was a real bummer during that time.
That's a weird memory to attach to such an amazing
super outing. Weird, yeah, right?
Gosh.
Because I was just watching some Formula One and Mark Webber's voice was on one of the recordings. I was like, oh, I remember hanging out with Mark Webber. And I was like, what did we talk about? And I could so as up in the mountains with Mark Webber, I remember having a schnitzel of some sort with him at that chalet at the time. Wow. But yeah, no, it was a very, very, very cool thing that I'm very thankful to have been a part of. And then as far as for yours, I mean, it's weirdly similar in some ways. It's the Blancpain dive trips.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have loved a seat on any of those boats. You know, there's camp vibes when you're on a boat, like on a liveaboard. Yeah. And to have that with you, I think would be such a delight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the Tudor Splashdown story to go with something more recent, than sort of the Blancpain series, but really it's probably, it's your sort of far flung Terramina, you know, diving in cool places with Blancpain or supporting whatever cool, you know, ambassador or spokesperson they're doing the next thing with.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of those look like such a good time, and kind of like with Clipperton, really not a watch thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just that a watch brand is involved. And so you kind of get attached. Like that's how Clipperton kind of came about. Yeah. There was no, to this day, I'm sure Oars didn't make any money or reap any significant benefits from Clipperton. Yeah. I think they did it because it kind of matched the way that they wanted to spend that kind of money from their brand. But yeah, I mean, just anything like that really, you know, remains quite appealing to me. And, you know, now it's 9 years ago, 10 years ago for Clipperton. So
yeah,
it's been a while for sure.
It's funny how, you know, we've had so much overlap in terms of our interests and topics that you and I generally cover. And yet we've done the number of press trips we actually did together over the years, I could count on one hand or less, you know, I mean, it's, well, I guess kind of less than one hand, but I mean, it's, you know, I mean, the one that stands out was, you know, the Tudor trip in Florida a couple of years ago for the
FXD Black.
But like, you know, like you'd think we would have been on 5 diving trips together or something like that, but it just doesn't come about. It's weird. Yeah.
Man, how many dives have we even done together? Not that many.
Yeah, I know.
A couple in Vancouver.
Yeah, right.
We did Florida.
Yeah.
We'll have Chicago next week.
Yeah.
And even when we worked on the Tudor project, this is years and years ago, but up in Tobermory, I didn't dive.
Right. Yeah. You were manning the drone.
I was manning the drone and I was kind of running the topside operations. Yeah. You know, that was Sarah and I had kind of designed this shoot back when Tudor was doing more sponsored stuff and Hodinkee did this big spread. I can link it.
Mm-hmm.
But I shot everything topside and you handled shooting. We had a model, but like that was a diver and you handled shooting underwater in Tobermory, but we got to spend that time together, but we didn't even get to dive together. I didn't get in the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's too much to do. And you know, when your goal is really to get the photos, another person in the water is not helping anything.
Yeah. Right. Right. All right. Good question, Ninad. All right, let's move on to one from Matt Frets and Dials. You want to read that one?
Yeah, he says, James and Jason, if you could have one dream adventure that you could make happen, what would that be? I think the two of you have been fortunate to have parts of that dream happen for you, but what would be the ultimate prize? Could be anything, such as playing the tambourine for Bob Dylan on stage or diving to the deepest depths. I think both of those options sound terrifying.
Playing tambourine for Bob Dylan, I love that.
Yeah, specific. Tambourine might be the absolute max of my ability musically. And even then, I think I could let Bob down.
Yeah, right, right.
There's only one that really immediately jumps to mind for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's growing up obsessed with Top Gear and then the Grand Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be to go along on one of those adventures where they're sent to the other side of the world. They have to buy a car there. They do some crazy stuff to it. And then they have to complete some ridiculous drive.
Yeah.
You know, the Craigslist 4x4s in, you know, the Andes. Amazing. Or the Mauritania trip more recently. And I'm obviously exceptionally excited to see what Thomas and James and the new team for the Grand Tour get up to in the upcoming season. But that's the one that immediately leaps to mind. Like, I've done a lot of cool adventures, but I mean, one of those ones where you get to go somewhere that some people can't even pronounce and figure out a car, you know, drive across the Makati Kati or really any of those. I mean, like all of them just sound like such a blast. Uncomfortable for sure, but you know, it's that type two fun or whatever.
Yeah, those are good ones.
How about you?
Yeah, for me, it would be this lifelong fascination that I've had, and if I'm honest, a fear, is just offshore open water sailing, like long distance sailing.
And oh, cool.
I, you know, I've talked about it a little bit before. Kind of my fascination with it. And, you know, I've dabbled in kind of inshore sailing and kind of crewing on boats and stuff. But to sail across the Pacific, you know, over several weeks from, you know, it could be San Francisco to Hawaii or, you know, further. But to live on a sailboat and to crew on a sailboat, not single-handed, that's a bit beyond even my fantasy here. But to kind of just spend time in that kind of minimalist environment doing something that I would find one of the last kind of true adventures on Earth, you know, that's still kind of very old school and very hands-on and analog. And that would be, just, you know, I'm not sure what size boat or whatever, but just, you know, just sailing across the Pacific, I think would be both terrifying and incredibly satisfying and just kind of a dream of mine. I'm not sure I'll ever get around to that sort of thing in my lifetime, but you know, we all have those you know, windmills that we're chasing, so that's mine, I guess.
Sure. I love that. Yeah, that's a great answer for sure. I don't know that it's something I would aspire to do, but I sure like reading about it.
Yeah
I the storytelling from it is quite amazing for sure. All right, thanks so much for that question, Matt Fretz and Dials. Next up, we've got one from Mark M., who says, how does a brand's logo affect how you feel about a watch, whether the company is old and established or relatively new? A contentious question, because lots of brands, especially some recent brands, do take a lot of heat for the logo, have changed their logos because of that heat and that sort of thing. Jason, do you feel strongly about this, or is it, like, for me, I think it's just, if it's bad, I will notice it. As long as it crosses a certain line, I don't really pay that much attention to a logo, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think at first when I read this, I thought, nope, logo doesn't really matter to me. But it does, because it's part of the overall design aesthetic of a watch, you know, as much as dial color or font used on a bezel or, you know, crown guards or whatever. I think, and the logo is something you look at a lot. And, you know, some brands just have a word mark, you know, in fact, most of them, like quite a few of them. And then some actually have a legitimate logo. And I feel like one that changed, that I think is probably one that you had in mind as well, was Braymont. You know, when they changed from the old kind of more subtle word mark with the propeller underneath to kind of the newer, blockier font with the kind of the compass rendering there, I just don't care for it. It kind of went along with the overall vibe or direction of the brand that I wasn't on board with anyway. And the logo just kind of encapsulated that. I think another, you know, coincidentally British brand that kind of struggled with logos for years was Christopher Ward, and kind of famously so. I think people used to give them some grief because they were changing fairly often and none of them really struck a chord with people. And I think they've finally settled on a good one, and it's very minimalist. It's kind of this combination of an English and Swiss flag together. And, right. And I find that very compelling. I think it's a great subtle logo that doesn't get in the way. Yeah. So I do think, you know, I think there's some really great logos. I think, you know, looking at some of the big brands, I think a brand like Omega, I've always just liked their logo. I mean, it's just an Omega symbol, but like that with the word underneath just works. It just, and they've kept it the same for forever. And it's great. Same thing with Rolex, of course, but
yeah, I love CWCs, especially the old one.
Oh, the old one.
Yeah. I love the way it sits on the dial. There's a pleasant symmetry to CW and C. They're all kind of a balance.
No,
there's definitely ones that stand out as being good. But for me, it is one of those things. And I think this is kind of how it is like with fonts as well, because I know some people are so dialed into fonts.
Yeah.
And I just don't have that wiring. It has to be like bad. It has to be papyrus. It has to be... Mm-hmm. You know, a mix of fonts that don't make any sense, where I go, this doesn't work for me. Like the sudden application of script in an otherwise, you know, serifed scenario or nonsense, like it just, it can be kind of jarring,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
But I don't find myself that picky about it, but there are, you know, there are logos that are bad and you just like, I would notice them and it would bother me. And once they hit a certain line, it bothers me less. But that's also kind of how I feel about a lot of watch brand names in general.
Yeah.
You know, I've never understood it. And to be clear, this isn't a poke at Christopher Ward. I think that that name works nicely for a watch.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of watch brand names that are just some dude's whole name.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like first and last right on the dial. And I got to be honest, it could just be that there's no watch I want less than the new James Stacey Diver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like it could just be that it's that kind of a feeling.
Yeah.
But if you're starting a watch brand, try and come up with something that isn't your whole name, for example.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just right there on the dial.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I think it's there's enough out there that are just some guy's name for sure.
I think, you know, what I do like is you know, a brand like Citizen, like they've kind of kept theirs the same, the word mark for many years. It's subtle. It's fine. It's kind of unobtrusive. But then they add that great element that, you know, we've used in collaboration with TGN and will be later this week as a little hint.
ProMaster.
The ProMaster logo. I mean, it's so simple and yet great. And then, you know, even this vintage Aqualand I'm wearing has it on the dial from 1985, and it's really cool. But you know, to close out, I guess, with a bit of a gripe, it would be, you know, you talked about fonts, and I'm not that dialed into them personally, but Seiko's mix of typefaces always has bothered me, especially Grand Seiko. Like, you know, they'll have like three different fonts on the same dial, and it's just it's always just kind of irked me, but not enough to dislike the brand or anything like that. But yeah, it's an interesting question. I'd love to get kind of a list going on Slack and see how people react to this as well, and kind of
Because my guess is it'll be somewhat subjective, right?
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, yeah.
Like there'll be logos that people don't like, and there'll be others that go, "Oh, I do like that one. I don't like this one."
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, there's some that I think are quite successful. Victorinox, always kind of I like to see.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Longines is nice with the wings. Feels very automotive.
Mm-hmm.
To me.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a mix. I love the Breitling wings as well.
Yeah.
I like seeing them in an applique on the dial.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's lots of good stuff there. But I agree, this could be a really fun one for the Slack.
Yeah.
For that question, Mark M.
All right. Next up, we have a question from Adam Peterson. My simple question is this. Do you have any questions for the crew at large? Anything you wonder about your audience as a whole? There's an interesting one.
Yeah, nothing really comes to mind simply because if I have a question, that's what the Slack is for.
Yeah.
And if I ask on the episode, I'm not sure how I would get necessarily, I'd get the answer at some point when people are listening. But no, I feel like we have that kind of two-way. If I have a question, if I'm curious about something, there's a way I can usually put it down. But I would say for the most part, nothing leaps to mind as far as a question for the crew. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same. I feel like with the advent of Slack over the past few years and kind of to our earlier point about the feedback loop that we get there, I think that's the perfect vehicle for it. And I'm just always impressed with you know, all these members there that and what people are doing and overcoming and accomplishing. It's just, I'm constantly amazed. At, you know, in fact, it gives me a bit of imposter syndrome. Sometimes I look and, you know, for all that we talk about and kind of, you know, do the show every week, then I go on Slack and I'm like, you know, yeah, I did this, but that guy has done it seven times or he's done, you know, whatever. And it's inspiring and it's great and it's humbling. And I love that. And I guess, you know, if I were to ask any specific questions, I'd just love to flip all these questions that we get in the Q&A or the Q&A. Just ask everyone to chime in on these and all the Q&As, which is what the Slack is for. And we do get that feedback and it's been really fun. So
yeah, good question, Adam. Sorry, I don't have a better answer, but it's definitely a good question. I think, yeah, when pushed, we have the ability to kind of ping a good portion of the crew pretty easily via Slack. So
yeah,
should a question arise, I'll be sure to ask. And if my memory's serving me at that moment, I'll tag you as well.
All right. Next up, we have one from the Luigi guy who says, what is your workflow for episodes, preparation, guest invitations, shared documents, and how do you always find fitting quotes?
Got a good one for today. Stay tuned for it. Do you want me to break this down, Jason? Is that the
yeah,
fastest
I think
round?
So. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we've really changed very little in a decade. We use a Google Doc. That's basically copy and pasted from the previous episode. And then we just update what number it is and delete the parts that aren't part of the form, I guess. But, you know, we have a set intro, which I'm sure many of you would recognize if it's not your first episode. And then we have some very simple, you know, we're going to do what's the sort of news that you might want to hear at the top, show topics, you know, housekeeping, that sort of thing. Risk check, main episode, final notes, quote, and get out. We pick a topic that's usually done just a couple of days before, unless we know we have a guest. Then we will get on a Zoom call. It's typically done at the same time on Tuesdays, or at least traditionally has been. That will adjust if we have a guest, but we would invite the guest to the Zoom. In a scenario where it's possible, we will send that guest an inexpensive USB microphone. Jason and I have learned that even if you do that, people won't know how to connect it or won't have the correct connection on their computer. So sometimes it's just you do your best. If you can hear the kind of like sad frustration in my voice, it's because it's just so much harder than I think it should be to plug in a microphone and put it 2 or 3 inches from your face. But I've learned both in TGN and doing this for Hodinkee and doing this for just producing content in general, that it is something that other people find difficult, that, you know, I just have enough practice to not find it difficult, I suppose. Basically, we record the Zoom call, which gives us, you know, the three, let's say we have a guest, the three audio files. Let's say it's just Jason and I, then we have backup. And then Jason is recording his side locally. I'm recording my side locally. And then we just use a shared folder to put the two big WAV files, you know, an episode's probably about 1 gigabyte each. And then I use GarageBand to cut those together, both removing parts that we don't like or that we reset. If we misspeak or we lose the point, I will trim that so that it's not too lost in the sauce at times. And then I'll, you know, kind of trim it for pacing. If there's any discrepancy in our audio because of timing over the internet, I will remove that so it sounds more conversational and kind of paced correctly. Export the file, and then that goes over to Buzzsprout, which is where we host the show. The Buzzsprout one links to Substack, which is where we host the notes for the show so that they're perpetually searchable and available for things like the complete TGN project, which is a full transcript and searchability of everything we've done over the last decade. Thanks, Paul Hubbard, very much for that one. And then basically you create the show notes. So it's a couple of paragraphs, it's an image, and then it's a link to everything that we talked about. I handle that. And then you schedule to publish at 6 a.m. on a Thursday. Go from there. And then for quotes.
Oh, yeah, quotes, right.
Oh, please, go ahead.
Yeah, quotes, I mean, it's kind of fun, but it oftentimes is kind of a last minute, almost an afterthought, almost like, we need a quote.
Sometimes, yeah.
We never used to really tie them that closely to the topic, but I think, you know, I remember maybe it was during the pandemic, you started to kind of just focus strictly on kind of quotes from the Stoics, and we did that for a while, and then now whenever I'm looking for a quote, we kind of just trade off. We don't really have an assignment for who gets the quote, but we kind of just look for quotes that are loosely related to the topic and kind of just Google around and look and find some good ones and hope that we hadn't run them before, which I think we've got a good track record for not repeating quotes, I think.
I genuinely don't know. It's something that I stress about, and then I just try and say, hey, if we run it twice in 10 years, what are you going to do? And I usually just try and think like, what's the broader theme of the show? Like in this case, it's questions. So maybe the theme is curiosity, or living a curiosity life, or how to ask questions. And I'll just find an interesting quote. So stay tuned for the one we have at the end. It's a goodie. But thank you so much for that one, the Loogie guy. I hope that informs something. If you want to make a podcast of your own and you want a bit of advice, you're welcome to send me a DM. I'm sure that the technology has evolved in the decade that we've been doing this. I've made very small adjustments to the way that we do things because we have a certain comfort for it. But certainly, you know, now you have Riverside, which would handle a lot of this for you in terms of dealing with the files and possibly even the microphones and giving me more of a comptroller setting over a room of people who might be speaking and that sort of thing. But for Jason and I, for this show, this is what works, and we find it light enough to remain efficient. Let's get to the last question here, and then we'll jump into some final notes. This comes from JP Radelet, who asks, who would each of you back in an all-out fight to the death for the Muppets. So a Muppet Battle Royale. who would we kind of rubbing the shoulders and encouraging them to get back out there for another round of a fight to the death, which for the Muppets feels desperately out of context and kind of tone, but a fun question nonetheless. Jason, what kind of leapt to mind? Because you kind of got to get into the mentality of the Muppet, right?
Yeah, there was one that came to mind immediately, and as I had to refresh my memory about who the Muppets were, you know, who all the members were, I still stick with my initial kind of brainwave, and that is Animal, the wild, frenzied monster drummer. I'm reading this off of Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. Author Christopher Finch calls Animal the ultimate representation of a long line of Muppets who personify unbridled appetite, both carnivorous beast and physical manifestation of pure libido. I always liked Animal. You know, I haven't watched the Muppets since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Just to be honest, and I don't have kids, so they never re-entered my life. But I'm happy to see that Animal still remains in the lineup, and I always liked him. And I've just read something recently. It was like one of these Instagram posts that's posting like videos of great concerts and songs. And I think it was one of John Bonzo Bonham, the drummer for Led Zeppelin back in the 60s and 70s. And apparently he was the inspiration for Animal.
Fabulous.
And that's very fitting. So
that's great.
Yeah. 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 I think Animal would do great in a battle royal.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You know, I kind of went two different ways. The first one was Beaker for me. So obviously due to his time as the assistant to Dr. Bunsen Honeydew, he's been burned, blowed up, beat up. I think the guy can take a punch, right?
Yeah. That's true.
And I mean, yeah. That look on his face, he's seen some stuff. He's got that 1,000-yard stare. He may not have the technique or the strength, but I think, you know, to paraphrase Fight Club, you know, skinny guys fight till they're burger.
Yeah.
And I think Beaker would too. And then the other one that occurred to me is like, I don't think he's got the spirit for it, but I could be wrong. Maybe he's got a dark side. Isn't Big Bird like 8'2"?
Yeah, you're right. Was Big Bird a Muppet technically though, or was he more of the Sesame Street thing? Was he on the Muppets?
Oh, maybe I've got it wrong. I don't know.
Let's double check. I think he might have been a Jim Henson creation, so that might be an honorary Muppet.
Is Big Bird a Muppet? Cool search, James. Big Bird is a Muppet.
He is
an anthropomorphic 8'2" tall yellow bird.
8'2"?
Character.
You even got the height right.
8'2".
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. All so right. Apparently he for Sesame Street, but I guess the characters on Sesame Street were Muppets.
Okay. Well, flightless birds
I feel
are quite
like
the fighters,
Muppet for not you know? Knowing that.
Yeah,
yeah right. Yeah, and he's huge.
Yeah.
And I can't tell. I think, you know, he often seems to have the presence of a child.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be unfair to Big Bird, of course. He just seems kind of sweet and curious about the world.
Yeah.
He may not have the fight in him. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Does Big Bird have a dog inside him? I'm not sure. Not sure. But if he did, I think pretty dangerous. I have to assume pretty strong legs.
Yeah.
The wings could be a factor. That's a lot of reach typically on a large bird.
Yeah, and beak. Yeah.
And then that beak, of course, and those piercing eyes. Terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. That's the best I got for you, JP Radlett. I think I put my money on Beaker, but I think Animal is a good call. I also think if you could convince Fonzie Bear that the other person had wronged somebody that he loved, he'd be terrifying.
Yeah.
He's a you know a man of strong principle and kindness. Fun question for sure. And I think that'll wrap up our second outing of the 2026 Crew and A. Thank you so much, JP, the Loogie Guy, Adam Peterson, Mark M, Matt Fretzendiles, Nanad, Kai, and Jackson B for your questions. We have so many more, and we will get to them over the course of the year. So if you offered a question, stay tuned for it on an upcoming outing of the Slack Crew and A. But Jason, how about some final notes and we can put a bow on it?
Yeah, boy, we're answering the important questions here on TGN. Never say we aren't, you know. Yeah, right.
Really hard hitting,
yeah.
Important topical concepts.
All right. My final note's a good one. It's just came to me either last night or this morning via an email link. I'm on the email list for Anne Ordain, you know, beloved Scottish watch brand. We've had Lewis Heath, the founder, on before. I did the project with Paulin, kind of their sister brand, last year. Anyway, they're kicking off kind of a new YouTube series called Origin Stories about, you know, kind of the origins of the brand and various pieces in their collection. And they released the first one. and it's about the Model 1, which was their first outing, their first watch when the brand was founded, and kind of where they cut their teeth and became known for making enamel dial watches. And this is just a great, it's a 12-minute video. So, I mean, you know, as kind of brand videos go, it's on the longer side, but it has a lot of kind of interviews with Lewis and various members of the team, and kind of digs into kind of the background of the design and the development of the Model 1 and kind of some of the challenges that they faced and inspirations. And it's just really good. I think, you know, it's funny. It's one of those brands that you wouldn't think would be in my wheelhouse, but I've, you know, as with so often is the case, you know, in this business, it tends to be all about the people. And once you kind of dig in and kind of learn more about these smaller brands, I've kind of developed a real fondness for them and really enjoyed this this video. So check it out.
Yeah, that's great. Looks awesome. This is brand new to me, so I appreciate it deeply. Looks like a good one. And yeah, I have become a fan of their watches. Haven't had the pleasure of owning one, but I like the way that they kind of go about things their own way and have sort of an interesting focus on traditional craft, but at a price point that's can be sometimes kind of surprising.
Yeah,
which is nice.
All right.
All right. So last week I talked about a fan. Mm-hmm. I think that was last week. And this week I have a vacuum. so we're sticking with the you know, household appliances. To be fair, I might need a vacuum because I run a fan all the time. I find my office to be kind of dusty. I am always kind of battling that element. And over time, I waited probably 6 months for a sale, but I picked up this Hodo handheld vacuum. And I just, dude, I absolutely love it. It's a little tiny vacuum. It's probably the size of like a little bit bigger than like a tall boy.
Yeah.
Beer can. Yeah. And then it's got attachments and the air goes in and out. So it can also be a blower.
Huh.
I think it's designed to be useful like in cars. I use it all over my office now and it's just excellent.
Yeah.
My baby son pulled over a plant the other day, spilled dirt everywhere. And then 2 seconds later, it was all zapped up. It's a popular enough model that I was able to go on to the internet and find like a 3D printable rack for it for my IKEA SCADIS board, which I have in my room with a bunch of other tools on it. And yeah, I paid a little under 100 Canadian for this. That puts it in the neighborhood about $70.
Yeah.
If the use case for this exists in your life too, it's quite a nice product. USB-C chargeable, simple, light, definitely great for things like cars, but also like, you know, sometimes you just have a backpack and it's got like some dirt or something at the bottom. You put shoes in it or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you can just kind of zip that out instead of tipping it out on the floor. And if I have to go downstairs and get the full size vacuum, then I'm always just kind of delaying doing that.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, this is just kind of nice where you see a little spot and you can grab it off the board and zip it up and you're good.
Yeah. Yeah. I like
handy thing to have around.
Yeah. 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 You're right. They do kind of market it for auto care, it says, but I think in a workshop or whatever, I think it'd be, yeah, it's great. Nice.
Yeah. It's not going to do the shop vac. And like, I also have the DeWalt,
mm-hmm.
which is like a little bit, well, not a little bit, quite a bit stronger, quite a bit more powerful, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But for those smaller sort of, yeah, around the house, certainly for automotive jobs, it seems quite capable. So.
All right. Well, between this episode and the one we're going to record together at our Airbnb in Chicago next week, that'll take us to our midsummer break. We're going to be taking the last 2 weeks of July off back in early August. But for now, thanks so much for listening. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab a new TGN signed NATO, please visit the all-new redesigned thegraynato.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And with Wind Up Chicago on the horizon, we leave you with this quote from Chicago native, author, and activist Saul D. Alinsky, who said, "Life is an adventure of passion, risk, danger, laughter, beauty, love. A burning curiosity to go with the action, to see what it is all about, to go search for a pattern of meaning, to burn one's bridges because you're never going back anyways, and to live to the end."